Welcome all once again to Dual Roads in episode 92. We are nearing the end of the year, and that means there aren't many games coming out. I don't even... Oh, we had Far Cry 3 this week. I don't know if anything else came out.
don't need anything else to come out, because that game looks fucking awesome.
So it would seem. It's been getting a lot of reviews. I mean, apparently it's not the Walking Dead Game of the Year quality, but what can be?
But is it a next-gen game?
Is it a next... I don't even know what
we
that means.
We use not next-gen, so...
Oh, yeah. But I don't even know. But yes, we got that, and I don't really think anybody here has been playing it. Actually, Martin was, but I have no idea where he is this week. So
he's probably playing it.
Probably playing it, or probably trying to find a way to sell his Wii U after purchasing it, and realizing it's a bad decision.
Oh, he ended up caving and getting one.
Yeah, we talked about that last week, because he went back and forth on it like the entire launch weekend and just ended up...
Well, the sounds of it, he may have even bricked his Wii U by now.
That's the distinct possibility that does seem to be happening. Which is, honestly speaking, one of the reasons I'm happy I'm not buying it. Nintendo tends to have the most reliable hardware at launch, but it seems like nowadays, more and more often, launch buyers are beta testers for everybody else.
Yeah.
So you just wait a couple of months, and usually, you know, you get a decent starting library, and you get a system that's more reliable, and hopefully no day one patches. But we shall see. But yeah, since we don't really have any new games to talk about, as far as I know, yes, Jason and Daniel have something that I'm missing.
Just Assassin's Creed, but I can save that for another time.
Yeah. We're going to kick it off with, some random news stories from this week, some big ones. And then we're going to delve into our Game of the Year countdown again, continuing, starting with March of 2012 and going through June of this year. Some decent releases, no controversial stories, thank God for that, right? I guess we'll kick it off with the most recent thing, because this was announced just last night at, the Street Fighter's 25th anniversary tournament. It's Street Fighter Crossover. Is it Crossover X? Whatever, Mega Man? Which, for some reason, has a backwards name to me. It's a Mega Man game with Street Fighter characters as bosses. And when you defeat the Street Fighter characters, you get their powers as in any Mega Man game. It's coming out, I believe, December 17th, and it's going to be free on PC.
It's a pretty cool idea. I mean, at least Capcom haven't just completely forgotten Mega Man, like everybody was saying they were.
Yeah, and I think it's a great and smart way to celebrate both franchises' 25th anniversary.
And it's free.
And it's
What's
free.
What's not to like?
There's a lot to not like, apparently, because people still found some way to complain about it.
Oh.
I don't get it. I don't get it at all.
Can't please people. Like, I've not been Capcom's biggest fan, but free, you know?
Wait, what is that music?
That's a good question. I thought I was just hearing it, and it was my computer.
Oh, okay. But yes, it looks like a great little package. It looks like Mega Man 9 and 10, so it's not a graphically intensive game, so they're not giving away some AAA title, but... It's free, it's Mega Man, it looks like a ton of fun, it has Street Fighter characters, it's an interesting crossover, it takes two franchises that really don't mesh well on paper, throws it in and makes it something unique. I'll be checking it out come December 17th, I hope everybody else is. Again, it's free, like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, that sounds
you're an
cool.
Idiot, and you think that it's worthy, worthy something to complain about when it actually isn't. Capcom are giving three things away for once. You know, you get
the
a
only
Mega Man
I have
game,
is
and it's
the name.
It costs you nothing.
Yeah, like I said, I think the name's just backwards because, again, you would think that in a crossover, that's a game that's the dominant frame for the design should be first and not second, because it does make it sound like a Street Fighter game. And Street Fighter X Mega Man would not have been as interesting because we already kind of have that in Marvel vs. Capcom franchise.
Well, except for the fact that they decided to leave Mega Man out of that game.
Well, in the most recent
he's
one.
He's in
1 and 2. I thought he was in Ultimate, but I could be mistaken.
The Zero is in Ultimate.
Same difference.
He's a Mega Man costume.
so there you go. No, I'm not even going to pick on that game this week. It's not worth it. The other thing that we missed out on while we were doing our Game of the Year stuff last weekend was the THQ Humble Bundle. I don't even think it has Indie in it, the name.
Nope. Well, no, because it's not Indie.
It's the Humble THQ Bundle.
And it is extremely humble because being a AAA publisher who has to come hat in hand, I should say, to your consumers and beg them for money has to be a humbling experience for any company. Did any of you purchase it?
I bought 5 copies.
Okay, you really must like THQ.
I'm clapping. Really like... I don't know if you can hear.
and I do it because it can't have been easy for Jason Rubin to make the decision. And, I mean, and let's face it, somebody needs to make up for all of the idiots that are complaining about it. And I like THQ. They put out some really good stuff. And the amount of people that work at THQ don't deserve to lose their jobs for the good stuff that they put out.
Yeah, and they've shown, I mean, a willingness to take more risk on new IPs than some of the other, like, bigger publishers. So it'd be a real shame if they go under. I mean, we all know the trouble they're going through. Like, I don't understand the complaints at all. Like, there's nothing bad about this at all.
Here's what I don't understand, right? So the main complaints is, oh, there's DRM. Oh, it's not indie, you know. And, oh, there's no Mac and Linux versions. Well, in that case, why don't you buy the bundle, give all of the money to charity because you have that option, you know, and that way you actually do some good.
Well, I think the first thing is, and this is, I've seen this complaint a lot, is the fact that it isn't an indie bundle, and a lot of people think that because it is, it might be abused in the future, which is a possibility. I mean, it's kind of like the same mentality with Kickstarter. Once Double Fine did it, people were like, you know, you're going to see major parties trying to beg you for money. But this... And I, you know, it works for the indie bundle, but I think this brings more attention to it. It brings a
It's better. It's more advertising for the Humble Bundle,
that,
which will benefit indies down the line.
I know loads of people that don't care about indie games just because they're indie games. Whereas, look, you can get Saints Row 2, Saints Row 3, even for £4. They're going to be all over that.
And then, you know, like Daniel said, you can donate all the money to charity. Like, it's charity. Like, this is a great cause. Like, it doesn't have to go to THQ, but obviously if you give them money, they really need it. I mean, they're pretty much
as backable as
any developer right now anyway. So, and like I said, like, I've shown a willingness to take more risks on new IPs, and on the one hand, it's kind of bit them in the ass, but, like, that would be terrible for that to go away and to have the stable of AAA publishers shrink even further. And, I mean, that's just not good for the industry.
The last thing we need is EA owning Saints Row. That's the last thing that we need. As publishers go, you can get a lot worse than THQ.
Okay. I think Nick is trying to join us.
Sorry.
Are you not a fan of THQ?
Joining us from the start.
I'm just over here grunting. I didn't even know I was a part of the call yet. Sorry about that.
But I'm a huge fan of THQ. They've had some interest. I mean, the problem is they tend to introduce a lot of interest in IPs, but they just can't find their footing. Other than Saints Row, I don't think any of their franchises have really stuck this generation.
Darksiders has been solid, but it hasn't been huge.
Yeah, I thought the first one did well, and then the second one did eh.
I think, I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think it's sold decently. But again, they need a hit, not just a solid.
Yeah, and that's kind of, and that happens a lot of times with them. It's like they get a first game that sells well, and they try to expand the second game, and it just doesn't do that well. It happened with The Blob, it happened with U-Draw, it happened with Darksiders, it happened with Red Faction, where they're just like, you know, it has a decent first outing, and then it just doesn't catch on for one reason or another. And they invest a lot more money into it, and then it kind of, you know, these are the things that kind of bit them in the ass overall. And it's interesting to see, because we've seen this, I'm reminded of The Blob and U-Draw, because the same thing has happened with Epic Mickey 2, where we see a game that was exclusive to a platform that kind of expands out to all the platforms, and somehow that ends up weakening its market share, because U-Draw, The Blob, and Epic Mickey have all sold worse than their initial successor.
Well, because the audience aren't on Xbox 360 and PSP for the most part.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily... It's weird then that they lost the audience that they had initially on the Wii or something like that, because where did it go in that time?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of factors at play. I think Epic Mickey, for example, specifically, there's a lot of excitement around the first game. You know, it's the first video game starring, like, original video game starring Mickey, who's, like, you know, this ubiquitous character. And then, you know, even when the first game came out, like, a lot of people bought it, but it wasn't, like, everyone was hailing it as a great game. You know, people were complaining about the camera and the platforming and, like...
Not to mention some of the initial, like, art that was, like, released. It was very deceptive. It wasn't anything like what Epic Mickey turned out to be. Because even I was interested in Epic Mickey when they released that first screenshot, and it turned out to be like, oh, man, this is going to be, like, a really gritty, like, maybe somewhat mature Disney game, and it turned out to be not at all.
And I mean, again, I'm talking very specifically, but with Epic Mickey 2, like, the whole draw of, like, the co-op with that other character, like, that's just, it's not as appealing to me as, you know, this supposedly dark twist on Mickey in his own game that the first one was. It's just a different sell, and it's not, and then you coming with all the back, I mean, that's just one example, that's one of their franchises, but, I mean...
Yeah, and I was thinking about, and Daniel brought up something too, because part of the, I always thought the part of the Epic Mickey 2 expanding to other platforms was a lot of people had that disconnect between what they released for the art and what they got in the game, and they blamed it on the Wii's hardware and its lack of power. So you would think that when they went HD, it would have kind of, you know, people, but yeah, I think part of it was just that the first game wasn't well received. I wasn't a huge fan of it, so my interest in it disappeared completely, but it just seems odd. And again, not just Epic Mickey, there have been other games that have gone multi-platform, and you would think it would widen the base, but in THQ case, it just hasn't worked out for them, which really has sucked for them, because they find these games and it's successful the first time around, and then they kind of bet the, especially with Udraw, they bet the farm on it, and it just really, really bit them in the ass.
Yeah, I think somewhat ironically, like, part of the reason I think there's been some success with the first iteration of these games is because they were exciting, because they were new, and they were different, and... You know, when you go back and then now we're making a sequel, you know, it's more of the same. Like, there's just less appeal there, like, than there was the first time, which is, you know, ironic in a sense.
So do you think that THQ is stuck now in a place where they can make successful first titles, but they shouldn't follow up the sequels?
I'm not necessarily saying that, but, like, it's... They're definitely, I mean, the deck is stacked against them right now. They're going to have to get really creative, and they're going to have to probably go for some lower risk projects, hoping, like, for their upside, and then, you know,
I think
don't know.
THQ tends to have quite a bit of success on PC, what with Company of Heroes, and Saints Row was a really big hit on PC, and all their Warhammer strategy games. So I think that they should, like, they. I mean, obviously they have some form of concentration on PC, but I think they should put most of it there for now. Because if they're spreading their butter too thin, you know...
That's an interesting analogy. But I really don't want to open this can of worms. The working theory has always been that there isn't enough money in PC gaming to make that a focus.
Well, there are companies that manage to do it fine. Valve did it for a very long time.
They're also funded by their Steam platform, though.
You know?
So they're a special case.
But I think he meant even before Steam.
Yeah. I mean, it was also a different time before Steam.
Yeah, I
understand what you're saying.
Valve could have not had Steam and not released any of their games on consoles, and they would still have had major success with things like Portal 2 and Left 4 Dead and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think you know, THQ have a footing on PC, and they should use it, you know, and they should, you know, because if, obviously, you've got more development costs with developing for more consoles, so maybe you develop a game for PC first, release it on PC first, and if it does well there, that's when you branch out and do it slowly, I think.
I agree with you to an extent.
And obviously they need to do something about their budgets of their games because they can't keep spending God knows how many millions of dollars on their games. But I mean, but they can do it. It's not impossible.
Yeah, and I think that's it would be smart of them to get in the mobile space in some capacity. I'm not saying they should dedicate their entire business to it. I think Daniel's right in that they do have a strong footing on a PC, and they should put some focus into that. But when we're talking about lower budgets and, you know, less risk for there is still potential upside. Like, that is mobile. And yeah, it's a really crowded market right now, but that doesn't mean it's impossible to do.
Well, Rubin's already said that they're not doing mobile.
Yeah.
So
yeah, at their juncture, I would not disqualify any revenue source that I can find. Just because they really need they need a hit, and I think that's going to be the problem for them. Is like even if these games come out and they don't need these to be moderately well. They need something that's like they need a Call of Duty, they need a Halo, they need an Assassin's
Creed. And the problem with mobile is you get a lot of games on there that sell quite well. Within the first few months, and then they taper off. THQ can't do that. They can't afford to create a lot of games that last not a very lot. They can't afford to make many games that last short amounts of time.
But isn't that how console development currently works? Like, you basically have a game that you can guarantee to sell open in a month, and then you don't really have anything to guarantee that it's going to continue to sell well after that. But I'm sure we'll return to THQ in the future because it is THQ, and it's like a fun train wreck to watch. They find some way to screw it up every week. Though South Park, I think it got a release date during the VGA, so I don't know. I didn't actually watch the show. We also had, speaking of the VGAs, we also had an announcement of Dark Souls 2, which is coming out for the 360, PS3, and I think PC. And, you know, people are kind of excited that the sequel's announced, but people are also worried because, like, the day after that, it came out in, I believe, Edge magazine that they worked, what are the words they used? They're trying to make it more direct, more straightforward, and more understandable. And fans of Dark Souls have not responded.
People have done the stupid thing and assume that if they're going to make that, they've done the stupid thing and they've assumed that they're going to make it an easy game. They're not going to make it an easy game because the reason why Dark Souls is Dark Souls is because it is hard as nails. What they're probably going to do is because Japanese games tend to be very obtuse and not very clear a lot of the time, and not the best design games, I reckon, and I think they're trying to eliminate that. Making something more straightforward is not making something easy.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
I don't know how much of Dark Souls you folks have played, but someone who lives with me is a huge fan of Dark Souls. Like, he plays it nonstop. Probably his favorite game of this generation. So, and he finally got me to play it over the summer. And the difficulty is fun in that game. That is what's fun. What isn't fun is running around trying to find where you need to be and it not really telling you, and you just kind of run in random directions until you're there. And my roommate wouldn't help and said that I needed to figure it out on my own as well. But so I think making it more straightforward about where you need to be, you know, what's going on, is going to make the game way more enjoyable for me, at least, as long as they keep that difficulty, because that's what's fun about the game.
Yeah, and I think we've just kind of gotten to the point in gaming where I think some of these terms are they have negative connotations, because usually when developers say it means that we're coming to dumb it down. And I understand that, because sometimes it literally does mean that. You get what happened with Dragon Age and Dragon Age 2 and stuff like that, or Dragon Age Origins, whatever it's called. And I would even go with Mass Effect and Mass Effect 2, where it became less of an RPG and more of an action game. So, you know, people see it, you know, they want to make it more accessible, they want to make it more... I think what they said is they want to make it more like Skyrim, and people are like, that's not what we want from Dark Souls. So I kind of understand their gut reaction to it, but I also think that there's not enough knowing now to really say that like, this is, you know, this
and
is
the problem is if you just say Skyrim, you can mean anything. It could mean the world, it could mean the combat, it could mean the crafting, it could mean anything, because there's so many different like facets to what Skyrim is. And it's like somebody, I think it was Adam Kovic from Machinima, he described Far Cry 3 as Skyrim with guns. And, you know, I don't see how that's a bad thing at all, you know? It looks like it's Skyrim with guns because you've got a lot of facets to the game, and it looks like it's a fairly deep game and something you could just walk around in the world in and do stuff and completely ignore the quest for a while.
I also think it's one of those things, it's kind of the same thing where people say, like, their shooters, like Call of Duty, in that right now Skyrim is the biggest Western RPG on the market. I think it sold somewhere close to 10 million copies. So it's just easier to assume that people have an idea of what Skyrim is instead of saying, like, this is The Witcher 2.
Yeah.
Which is a better game?
It could. I'm sure there are better shooters than Call of Duty as well. But the fact is that you have an idea of what Call of Duty is because it has such a wide user base, and the same thing can be said of Skyrim. So you go with the thing that has the wider user base because more people have had exposure to it than some random niche RPG that you found in, like, five people have paid. I'm not saying that The Witcher 2 hasn't sold well. It has, but it hasn't sold Skyrim well. Even Mass Effect hasn't sold Skyrim well, so it's just easier to kind of get that analogy. And it's, you know, it's going to be, it is this industry where we chase the thing that has the golden touch. And right now that's Skyrim for Western RPGs.
And I don't think, it's fairly obvious that the last thing that Dark Souls 2 is going to take from Skyrim is the combat. Because the combat is awful in Skyrim. And
that's one of the things that Dark Souls was praised most for.
Yeah, it's the combat. So it's going to be about how the game communicates itself to the player, because Japanese games, and maybe Dark Souls especially, I haven't played it, Dark Souls, maybe it's not that good at communicating things to the player, and that's all, you know, and sometimes that goes a long way. I don't like games that don't communicate stuff to me a lot, which is why, for the most part, I don't like games like Dota 2, because they're not very good at communicating things. And nor think games like Counter-Strike, because they're not games that can communicate things very well either.
Yeah, on the other extreme, though, you also don't want a game that over-communicates.
Oh, no, definitely not. Because I actually saw, I watched the Giant Bomb quick look of Guardians of Middle-Earth, and I was like, this HUD is a mess. There's just stuff everywhere on it.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting better with that, because some games, I like how Dead Space does it. But some games, it's like, yeah, I really don't need this much information on. Resident Evil 6 had an awful one for me. I hated that HUD. You know, sometimes it's the simplest. Mario's always been pretty good at it. Tiny, big, there you go. You know when you're close to the death. That's all you needed to know in those games. But yeah. And finally, and I thought this was interesting because he actually came out and defended this. BioShock Infinite, well, three things. One, the box art was released this week. Two, it was delayed into March, and then three, Ken Levine defended the box art. We'll start with the release date. I mean, a month delay isn't a huge thing.
How many month delays has this game had already?
Yeah, that's to say, when you add it up from the fact that it was supposed to be out this past summer.
Yeah.
It's huge, and from what I understand, again, I didn't watch it, but a lot of the reactions to it at the VGA seemed mixed. A lot of people saying that it looked choppy and not so fluid and stuff like
that. Yeah, I saw a lot of people complaining about the frame rate as well.
So, I mean, that's, if they can squash those issues, I mean, that's good. I mean, it's like Miyamoto said once, like, what was it, like a bad game is always bad, but a delayed game is only...
Delayed for a little while.
Yeah. So, I mean, a month is not a big... It's not like they're pushing it back to fall 2013.
Yeah, but, I mean, at this point, they might as well, because nothing else is coming out at that point.
You mean the console?
Nothing announced so far, which I was really surprised that. I assumed the VGA should have something related to new console hardware, but nothing. I guess everybody's just going to wait. I hope they don't all wait till E3. So, yeah, there's that. But most interestingly, the box art came out, and a lot of people were up in arms about it because it's not a... It's a very generic-looking box art.
I can understand where people's concerns are, because, like, the comparison people drew to it was Uncharted, and Uncharted for the most part is a game just about shooting people, and BioShock is not a game that's just about shooting people. There's usually more to it,
and it's more than just like Uncharted. It's become like, I mean, it's obviously a minor problem, but it has become a problem in the industry where the box art for almost every game is now dude on the cover in some passive-aggressive stance with a weapon and the title name over his head, and that's it. There's just a total lack of inspiration in any of these. And for a game like BioShock that has all these other things going on, I think it does do a disservice to the game. I mean, that's my take, but... I mean, and our listeners that didn't, like, see what Ken Levine said, he was basically saying, you know, like, yeah, we love this game, but at the end of the day, it has to sell, and, you know, Joe Frat guy isn't going to, you know, all he wants
sold.
To do.
Yeah, it's so, but I think what he's trying to say is that it's so well, and you already have those people who are BioShock fans who are probably going to buy this game no matter what the box art looks like. And that's just, and if you want to expand your audience,
and
sometimes...
to be honest... If you ask me, if you're judging a game based on its box art, you have something that you need to sort out, because...
Well, I mean, it doesn't apply just to games. I mean, people do this all the time. We do it with movie posters. We do this with movie trailers. You judge something based on a snapshot of a little portion of it, and you call it a day. And that's kind of what they're saying
but
here.
This is what I'm saying. Here's a game. Spec Ops The Line, right? Spec Ops The Line is a game that had pretty much the same thing as its box art. It looked exactly the same as every other shooter. And guess what? It played exactly the same as every other shooter. I don't care what anyone says about the story. It is a generic shooter, regardless of whether it makes mention of that in the story or not. And I'm not going to stick around for a story like 5 hours in that tells me, oh, you're so bad for playing this generic shooter game. I'm just not going to play it because it's a game that I've played 10 times before this generation. And
yeah.
if the game looks like that on the shelves, I'm not going to be interested. Oh, it's just like this game, and I don't really want that. Especially not from a BioShock game.
And I think, too, it just doesn't... It not only does it not really reflect the game, it just comes off as, like, lazy and boring. Like, I think if
why
you... And I'm
Liz,
not saying
I know
even
that
just...
She's in the back, but why is she not on the front? If she's such a pivotal sort of character to the thing,
yeah.
Why is she not on the front?
And for a game like this, like, you know, I always think back to, like, things like the Star Wars posters or Lord of the Rings or anything where it's not just, you know, protagonist, title, boom. It's, you have, like, a canvas of all these important elements. And you can have, what's his name, Booker on the cover with his gun. But why not set that against the backdrop of Columbia? Have the songbird tucked in some corner, like, ominously watching things. Have... Elizabeth, who, as Daniel said, is such an integral part of the game, feature in that in some way. And I don't think that takes away from...
Hey, Ken Levine, if you're
appeal.
Listening...
I think it adds to it.
Ken Levine,
yeah.
If you're listening, boobs sell. Elizabeth has boobs, and they are hanging out. Why is she not on the front cover?
I think people would complain about that, too. And as weird as it may sound, I also think that you may have a... you may lose people because there's a woman with boobs on the cover.
I do understand. Well, I think I understand why they would make this decision, though, in that you, like everybody on this podcast, understands what BioShock Infinite is about. If we're going to buy it, we're going to buy it, and the box art really isn't going to change our opinion. But you know that 45-year-old mom who has no idea what video game. To buy her son for his birthday or for Christmas or something, could walk past and say, oh, he likes those Call of Duty games, and this looks like that. So she picked it up off the shelf.
But that's the thing. When all the boxes look exactly the same, how are you differentiating yourself? And on top of that, I mean, we've heard this before, and I would like to meet these fucking focus testers who this is more appealing to them than something that is like visually striking. I don't understand it.
It depends.
Take my thoughts on the game aside. Like, I don't understand this approach at all.
I've actually been on focus tests for box arts before, and what tends to I can't remember the name of the games, but what happens is like they tend to put it against some really artsy one, and for most people, like the artsy ones, like Like, so me, I went for, like, the high contrast ones. Like, there was one, it was an interesting one. It had the two main characters, and it had, like, a black and white backdrop, and they kind of, like, came out of the image. And then there's a bunch of very generic ones. And it's kind of like the Bioshock ones with just the two characters, and they're standing there with guns over their shoulders because
was
that's
it
how
Army
people
of Two?
No, it was an Army of Two. It's actually, it's an unannounced game. I can't remember the name of it, and I think, technically speaking, I'm not even supposed to mention it. It's not announced yet. But I'm looking at these box outs, and I'm looking at some of them, like, how the hell is somebody going to get, like, past? And I'm thinking, like, these are the ones that are going to end up winning, because these are the ones that, like, everything else, and people want what they know they like. And it's going to be like, oh, yeah, this looks badass. This is the one I want to be associated
with. Yeah, I just think it shows that, like, the publishers think gamers are a lot dumber than they are. And I'm not saying, you know, there's plenty of dumb gamers and dumb people in general, but I don't get it.
There are plenty of examples of games that have very striking box arts that sold. Borderlands has
a
striking box art.
And movies and stuff, you know,
yeah.
With posters and every, like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, but Borderlands didn't. I mean, again, it's the, like, if you're comparing Bioshock to Borderlands, Bioshock is a bigger franchise. It sold more. So it makes sense.
Yeah, but Borderlands is a game more about shooting people in the face than
Bioshock. Yeah, but what I'm saying is that if you want to get a bigger audience, you go for the people. You go for the Call of Duty box art. You go for the Halo box art. You go for the Assassin's Creed box art.
Well,
in
that case,
you mean Halo.
What you're saying is the opposite, because you're saying that Bioshock sold more than Borderlands. But Borderlands is not doing what Bioshock is doing. Borderlands is going for a more striking box art than Bioshock is, which is the generic shit.
Maybe take
and even
two
Halo. You brought it up. I just want to touch on it really quick. It's not, you know, they could have had Chief there standing there with his assault rifle and that's it, but they have him. He's in a very specific pose, and you get just a hint in the background of this other shit that's going down around him. And that there's, like, I find that box art a lot more interesting than Mass Effect 3 or, you know, any shooter that's come out in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, but as I say, if you go back, Halo 3 has him with a gun. Halo Reach has him, and it has, like, a bunch of people, you know, it has, like, a squad on the cover and stuff like that. So it's not like they haven't done that box art before. Halo 4 just went for something different because
Was it any worse at selling? No, it broke a record the day it came out. Like,
well, I mean, it's opening month, it sold just in Halo 3, but that's...
I think this notion of box art sells games is really shallow, and people should stop using, like...
How much of the sales really come for this? Like, less than 1%. Like, it has... Like, people, will, at the very least, will YouTube a trailer or something. They're not just going to be like, oh, there's a bunch of $60 games. They all look exactly the same. I'm going to pick this one. That doesn't make any sense.
I'm agreeing with you folks, but I'm also saying that, have you never walked into a store and seen a box out that kind of stood out and you checked out what the game is?
Yeah, and it wasn't definitely one that looked like Bioshock Infinite.
Oh, I'm not saying that Bioshock Infinite is going to be that thing, but I am saying that there are people... I don't do this with video games, but I do this with comics all the time. I go to a comic shop, and comics, there are literally thousands of them on the shelf, and I go and I find the one that has an interesting cover, and that usually catches my eyes, and I'll flip through it and see if I'm interested in it. And I think it's the same thing with video games, is that if you have Bioshock Infinite doesn't work that way, but if you wanted an example of one that works well for me, is the Aliens Colonial Marines box art, which has a fantastic use of being a box art and using the white space.
Yeah, that is a great box art. But
it's striking, and it tells you what you need to know about the game in the
cover.
That's
exactly what the Bioshock box art doesn't do.
Yeah, but, I mean, I guess, like they said, they focus tested it, and it's going to appeal to those frat guys and those... I mean, I don't think Bioshock is going to appeal to those frat guys no matter what they try to sell it as, but they want to get that. They want to go after that market because... You know, that is the golden goose of gaming. That 18 to 34 year old macho male is what keeps a lot of companies in business, and everybody wants that pie, even though they aren't really going to deviate from their Call of Duty and their Madden and, you know, whatever else they buy. I just thought it was nice that he actually came out and tried to defend it. And from a business standpoint, what he's saying makes sense, even if it really probably won't benefit them in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad, you know, that he was at least, like, I admire him for doing that, you know, sitting down and explaining, like, that's, you know, and he acknowledges that they knew fans were going to be disappointed and stuff, but strictly from a business perspective, like, I don't know. But we should move on to...
Yes. I mean, we're done with the news for the week, which means we get to move on to our Game of the Year countdown stuff, which is always my favorite part of the year because we get to revisit 12 months of wonderful and not so wonderful games and news stories and all that other fun jazz. But before we get started, I believe we have somebody else joining us. I don't know if Josh is here yet.
Kinda. He's here.
Okay. Howdy. So yes, we've covered January and February. For some reason, and this happened last year as well, I believe, March has become like the new November, where you just get a ton of major releases out across all platforms. I assume it's partially because everybody wants to get out of the Christmas shopping season and they want to make their financial year stuff. But this year we saw the release of several major games and several not so major games. But we're going to start off with the game that caused the most controversy.
Oh, God.
We might as well because we have to talk about it anyhow. Mass Effect 3.
Okay, we're done. Game of the Year.
I know, it's not even your Game of the Year so far. So.
It could be, maybe.
It could be, maybe. It's not a really compelling...
I haven't decided my Game of the Year yet. But
it makes sense because it's a candidate. It's a candidate. But Mass Effect 3, it came in with controversy as far as people were upset.
About its box art?
I don't even know what the Mass Effect 3 box art looks like.
It was Shepard with a gun.
It looks like
and the title.
Or you could buy the special FemShep box art as well.
It was
Wasn't that just on the other side?
It was just a flip. Which was Shepard with a gun and the title.
It's a very special. And it's orange and blue. I don't know if you know about that motif as well. But yeah. That wasn't the controversy. It actually came in with the... I believe it was the fact that some of the content was locked away in the special...
On the disc.
Edition, and people didn't find out about that until...
From Ashes.
Yeah, for a couple of weeks, and then people were upset because it was content that's in the game, and in order to access it... as far as that goes, it was kind of a minor controversy for Mass Effect 3 because that went away when the game came out. And then the new ones... swept the nation, which was the fact that everybody hated the ending.
Because it actually was really bad.
Yeah, and I assume I'm going to be the biggest defender of this game when it comes to Game of the Year, but I have said from the beginning, like, the ending was bad. And it's mostly just poorly written. And
barely written at all.
And I disagree with, obviously, the uproar that came out of it, but just looking at it as a piece of media and the conclusion to not only this game but the trilogy, like, it was just unfulfilling.
Yes.
But I'm not petitioning for a lawsuit or whatever.
It wasn't the ending. It wasn't the fact that the ending was bad. It was the fact of everything that came out of the ending being bad. That was the real story, which Jason alluded to, was that we had petitions, we had articles, we had Forbes, we had game, we had journalists fighting amongst themselves. We had fans.
We had people sending 1,000 cupcakes of different colors to... there were cupcakes. It was great, actually. This was a great idea. There were cupcakes of different colors, but they all tasted the same. Which was... I thought that was pretty inventive.
I mean, the game came out in March, and this went on... Actually, this thing still kind of goes on. You still kind of have people, game sites have given it the Game of the Year or nominated it, and people have said that it doesn't deserve to be Game of the Year because the original ending sucked and stuff like that.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
I can understand it to a degree. It's one of those things that the... Does the means justify the end? Because it's one of those things. Because Mass Effect was such a big story-driven franchise that if the story ultimately doesn't prove to be, enjoyable or fulfilling, does that therefore ruin the franchise for you?
Well, what I have to say
they fixed it, but you have to remember, this was months. I mean, the fix came out in, what, August?
Yeah, and even regardless of that, it's just the ending... The very end of the game, I was extremely disappointed with. It felt like they dropped the ball. But this is a 30-hour game, and the entire rest of the game, for the most part, you know, there's some worse in there, but was phenomenal. So to say that 20 minutes, even if it's the end, I'm not, I mean, it's obviously, it's a knock on the game for sure. And it's such a big part of the game and the trilogy that you, it's not like I'm saying we should ignore it, but to say that 20 minutes outweighs 39 hours or 29 hours or whatever, just that, I completely disagree with that. Like, the rest of the game is incredible.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I see both sides of this, because I mean, it's the same thing. Like, if you've been invested in a movie franchise, for example, and let's say that it comes to the final part of the movie and the conclusion is just really bonkers and not satisfying, would that not sour you on the rest of the movie franchise? If you know that ultimately the ending doesn't justify your investment of time.
Well, I think it's just in games, especially because they're so long, and in these like RPGs and stuff, like the ending is obviously very important, but it's also about the ride. I mean, I'm not playing 30 hours just to get to the end. I'm playing 30 hours because that's 30 hours that I'm having a great time experiencing a great story and stuff with great, great characters. So I understand that sentiment, and but I think it also, it is different than a movie, because it's more than just you sit down in a movie, watch an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then, you know, the end invalidates everything. It's like the end of this, of a 30-hour game and a 90-hour trilogy isn't invalidated, or doesn't invalidate the rest of it. Like,
I mean, I get your point. I'm just saying, from the other side, I can see how people can say, like, you know what, this kind of screwed me over because I was so invested in these characters and these choices.
Yeah, and I get that, and it's just like, yeah, the ending dropped the ball, but does that mean you didn't enjoy going through all this with all these characters and stuff and all the choices you had to make, and you saw most of the consequences play out already, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think, and again, you know, I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
But again, it's kind of the point, like you said, you've made all these choices, but ultimately your choices were for naught because the endings are predetermined. So it's like, you know, you gave me the solution of choice, but ultimately it was just me going along for your ride, not me being the driver.
Right, and yes and no, because for most of the choices, the consequences happen before the end. So, I mean, that, I don't know about that.
Nothing's perfect. Even Mass Effect 3.
Nothing's perfect, but
Certainly not this game. I'm not saying this game is perfect, and as you said earlier, like, I don't know that it's even my game of the year, but I don't know how you could say it's not in the discussion. I'm not saying you guys are saying that or anything, but
yeah, I think it goes back to, you know, like, I don't believe a perfect score means a perfect game either, but I think people are just saying that, like, if there is a huge part of this game for a lot of people that turns to be unsatisfactory, it should kind of disqualify it from the game of the year.
Right.
And I also see that argument as well, but again, and we've had this discussion before, it depends on what you see your game of the year as. Is it the best game of the year? Is it the game that you had the most fun with? Or is it the game that kind of pushed the industry forward? Of two of those, I can see people, you know, I don't think Mass Effect 3 would be a game that pushes the industry forward. I also don't see Mass Effect 3 being the best game released this year, but if it's the one that you had the most fun with for that 30 hours before that last 20 minutes, then it's a fine contender.
I think I just want to make one last point with Mass Effect, is that because it's the end, I mean, barring like DLC or whatever, that's the last experience that you had with the game. Like, even I haven't replayed it or played the DLC yet, so that's the last thing I experienced. And so that obviously, you know, it's more recent in our minds, so it kind of weighs more. But that's why I want to play it again before we get to the game of the year discussion, because, you know, everything up to that point was just so good.
And I will just point out, I think, and I've said it before, but this is one of the main reasons we do this show. It's because it's always nice to revisit these things because, it has been 9 months since this game came out, and for a lot of people it is out. But, you know, they have added a new ending, they've added more content. So if you revisit it at the end of the year and the ending is more satisfying, does that change people's stance on it? Or are people still like, the original ending sucked, and this game, therefore, is disqualified from Game of the Year contendership for me? Either way, it's a fair argument. Like, you know, should you have to replay a game at the end of the year for your opinions to change? Moving on, we had the PlayStation Vita's first major shooter, which would kind of prove to be an omen for the rest of the year for shooters for that console, with Unit 13.
Was that the one by Zippo? The last game they ever made?
Yep.
That was a lot of people. That's a lot of things to say for the Vita this year. Because, I mean, the same thing could be said for Niantic, who later on made their final game, as far as console space goes, with Call of Duty Classified. And we also mentioned this earlier because we were talking about Street Fighter X Mega Man, but Street Fighter X Tekken came out this year, which I completely... I thought that was the end of last year.
I don't know anybody... I know a few fighting game fans, and I don't know anybody who is particularly a fan of that game.
Yeah, if we had... Yeah. So we don't have Adrian on here.
Yeah, I've heard very mixed things about it, especially being, if I'm not mistaken, it had, like, some type of bug where, like, you couldn't play music during online, or you couldn't... Something weird like that. Was this also the game where people found a way to unlock all the DLC costumes?
Yeah, I think so. And well, that was pretty much every Capcom fighting game this generation.
Yeah,
fair enough. We had Mario Party 9, which is, I'm sure, everybody's game of the year, because who doesn't want a 10th sequel to a popular franchise that hasn't
evolved? Mario Party, which is the worst one, if you ask me.
I love the Mario Party games. I think they're fun, simple, but yeah.
It could be a drinking game of the year.
Yeah, if that was ever a rule in our, that would definitely win every time it came out. It's a fantastic thing for that, but as far as, like, games, like, it's, has it, like, as far as Nintendo franchises go, Mario Party is the one that I would point to as the one that has not evolved from the first game to the ninth game.
Well, I just like it mainly because it's luck-based, and I hate luck-based games.
I love luck-based games. And again, this is why it makes a fantastic drinking game, is because everybody's always on equal footing. Like, there's
plenty of luck-based games. There's the one where you pit two Street Fighter bots against each other and you take bets.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, luck-based games have their place. I mean, it's kind of like board games. Like, you can't really be skilled at Monopoly. Like, you can probably be smarter than some people, but there's too much luck involved with it. So it works out in that sense. Another huge contender for Game of the Year, well, a serious contender for Game of the Year, I should say, Journey, came out on PSN in March.
I wouldn't say it was Game of the Year. It is incredibly good, but I wouldn't say Game of the Year.
I actually just played this last week, and I mean, it's a really emotional experience, and it's really cool, and artistically it's impressive, but I would not even consider it among my contenders personally.
I would.
Yeah, me too.
I definitely would. I haven't made any sort of decision on what my game of the year is, but it is definitely a contender for me.
Do you want to expand on that? Why is it a contender?
I don't know. I've never had that emotional of an experience in a video game, and it kind of affected me where I was thinking about it. I've played it once, and I haven't gone back to it since. But, like, even weeks after I had played it, I was still thinking about it. And a video game, I don't know, I've never had something have that sort of effect on me. And I think that is grounds for it being at least a contender. It will definitely be probably in my top three. You know, I may have had more fun, you can say, playing something like Borderlands 2 or whatever, but I think Journey is an experience I won't ever forget, and I think that definitely makes it a contender for me.
That's a good argument. I mean, as say for my part, I didn't have the same reaction afterwards, I guess. I was like, that was nice, I'm glad I did that, but I also was playing it after hearing everyone else talk about it, so I don't know if that was a factor, but for me it was more the integration of the music with the gameplay was the biggest thing, and the visuals too. I think they were all married really well, but the gameplay itself I felt was pretty simple and not, I don't know how to describe it, but it didn't
really
grab me. I think
Journey is a great game, because more for what it doesn't do than what it does do. It's very, very subtle in everything that it does, and that's what I appreciate the most about it. I just don't think that, like, when you compare, like, I don't want to be really, like, this is going to sound really bad, but as a game, I don't think Journey is that great. It's more of an experience than anything else. but it's not to the point where I would just write it off. Oh, it's a crappy art game. I don't
want to
see it.
Not at all.
And I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not going to argue that it's a simple game or even much of a quote unquote game, as it's more of an experience. But there are just so many moments that I had in the short time that I played it that I really don't think I'll ever forget. Like the first time, because I spent maybe three, four, like up until the snow part of the game, I had spent it with the same person the entire time. And the moment when, like, right as we're about to, like, get there, I don't know if you guys played with the same person or not, but when a person kind of leaves your game, they just sit down and kind of fade off into the desert. And when that happened to me, I had this genuine moment of sadness, and, like, I was alone in this journey all of a sudden. And that's a moment it's a moment I hope I don't ever forget, because it affected me in a way a game hadn't before.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great reason to have it nominated.
Okay.
I don't think any of us disapprove of this game or anything.
Running through the other games that came out that week, a Reality Fighter, which was a Vita game that I believe put you in a fight.
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that.
It sounds like just one of these games, like, the Vita's got a camera, so let's use it. Which is, for the most part, Vita games in general.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the DS went through that phase as well, because I actually have, what is that, Dojo? Photo Dojo?
Yeah.
The difference was that Nintendo gave that away for free. Yeah. Silent Hill Downpour, which I've heard really mixed things about.
Okay, so I've actually played Silent Hill Downpour, and sadly, this is not a good thing at all, if you ask me. The best part about Silent Hill Downpour is when it basically just copies Silent Hill 2. When you're in Silent Hill, the beginning of it is very linear and very boring and it doesn't communicate much to the player very well. And then you get to Silent Hill, and it's actually quite good. The side quests are kind of interesting, and you can learn a lot. The story is okay. I mean, I would accept it as a story for a Silent Hill game. No, I'm not really that much of a Silent Hill fan, but I understand what it tries to do. But the ending is so terrible. So, like, the whole point about Silent Hill is basically you're not really supposed to be fighting, and combat's not really a focus of the series, and basically towards the end of the game they force you into fighting, and it is really bad. The fighting system is terrible, and technically it runs on the UE, and it came out this year, otherwise we wouldn't be talking about it. And at the same time we have low frame rates and screen tearing, which doesn't make any sense. It's just amazing to me how somebody could make a game like that technically bad on an engine that people kind of know and understand, and works well on the PS3. Well, I played the PS3. Apparently, the 60 have the same problems. So, you know, it's a technical mess. It's not like it forces combat towards the end, and the only good thing is the middle bit where it basically replicates Silent Hill 2.
Okay.
So that's Silent Hill Downpour.
Anybody checked out
one of the better recently is Silent Hill games, but that's not saying a lot.
Anybody checked out Tales of Grace? This is? Nope. Okay. Let's see, what else did come out that month? Armored Core 5? No. Ninja Gaiden 3.
It was so good they had to fix it for the Wii U.
And they still didn't get that right, so
I think we can go ahead and get down to Kid Icarus. I'm sure you want to talk about that.
Which one?
I haven't played it. Kid Icarus?
Kid Icarus Uprising, which is dependent on how I feel about Xenoblade right now in the contender for my Game of the Year. And I know it's probably not what everybody expects from a Game of the Year, but to me, it's kind of, a lot of video games tend to take that cinematic approach where they kind of like big, grandiose stories. Kid Icarus takes the Saturday morning approach where it's kind of a goofy, fun time. I mean, before the presentation, though, I think one of the things that works so well about it is the fact that it marries two types of games into one. It's an on-rails I guess, shooter combat game makes Ten and Punishment, but it's also a third-person on-foot shooter, which works marvelously well. There's a myriad of weapons types, and the combat is silky smooth, and it's refreshing. I mean, it's still a third-person shooter, but it does it in such a unique way where, I mean, part of it is the design, which I think is the biggest knock against it, and a lot of people are going to have that issues with this game, is the control setup, where you have to use the stylus while holding the 3DS in one hand, and it doesn't really feel that comfortable most of the time. I mean, it's so bad that the system actually comes with a stand for you to do this with. But I've never had any problems with it. It just meant I didn't play for like 5 hours in a row. But I love the gameplay. I thought the air combat worked fine. It was actually the air combat worked great, and the on foot stuff was fantastic. There was a lack of enemy designs. Like some of it was kind of samey all throughout the game, but that happens. Really takes it over the top for me is the presentation. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of cartoons. I don't think I've ever hidden that from anybody. And from the design, the character designs, the music, the presentation, the narration, and stuff like that, it just has like this very Saturday morning feel to it. Pit, I should say, isn't your typical game hero. He's a hero. He's an angel. He has the power of fight and all that other stuff. But he doesn't take his job seriously. He's kind of goofy, and you know, a lot of that comes through his personality and how they deliver it. Like, he's kind of like Nathan Drake. He's talking throughout the entire game. He's talking to Palutena, who's the goddess, and then there's other people he's talking to, which I won't ruin, and I think that's another great thing, is that it has a really unique 3X setup that most games don't, in which like the stakes do get higher, but they get so ludicrously over the top that it works for this franchise. It's retro in the fact that it pays homage to the original game, even if you haven't played it, which I haven't, but at the same time modernizing stuff and poking fun of all the old tropes that this game exhibits. It's self-aware, it's funny, which I think is a very rare trait for a lot of video games.
Mm-hmm. Nintendo games. Well, not really.
I think Nintendo has a lot of... I think Nintendo tends to have some of the... If they want...
Yeah, I take back that. Their games are actually pretty whimsical.
Yeah, it's the problem. I think the problem is that sometimes, and this is where Kid Icarus works, because they were going for a Saturday morning vibe, is a lot of times Nintendo does terrible voice acting. But because they weren't going for serious in this game, it works marvelously for this type of game, because a lot of the people are over the top and kind of grandiose, but it works in that sense. You know, there's a ton of variety in what you get to do aside from the on-foot missions. You get to ride in a variety of vehicles and stuff like that. There are some interesting chapters, some fun side characters, some main characters, some of the best boss battles I've seen all year. And I'm speaking in like vague constructs because I really don't want to spoil a lot of this stuff, because I do think it's a game everybody should experience, because it's just so well told. It's just, it handles like a dream. It makes pretty good use of 3D, which...
It sounds like a very non-typical game for Nintendo.
Well, it's a non-typical game. I wouldn't, for Nintendo, yes, but it's come from Sakurai, who I think has always kind of been their more experimental wing. I mean, he does. I mean, Smash Brothers isn't what you would. I mean, nowadays you think of Smash Brothers, like, of course it made sense, but to take all your popular IPs and put them into a brawler, a fighter without a health meter, it was really radical at the time. He's also done Meteos. And some other stuff, and he's a very atypical Nintendo design. One, you know, there's a heavy emphasis, and this is something I was huge on it for this game. It's like there's a heavy emphasis on multiplayer, and multiplayer and single player interact in a way that doesn't really break either one of the games. Like basically, you can use any weapon you unlock in single player and multiplayer, and any weapon you gain in multiplayer you can use in single player. But what happens is that the stronger your weapon is in multiplayer, the more damage you take when you die. So it balances out that you may have stronger weapons, but if you die, you end up losing more points for your team.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting way to balance that, where you know you give people like, oh, you can have all the advantages you want, you just better know how to play, because if you don't, you're going to be screwed. So it's fun like that. And again, you can go to multiplayer, you can get these weapons that you wouldn't be able to get in single player that do a lot of damage. But again, it's like, you know, you have to be proficient with it, because there are some powerful weapons that don't shoot fast or don't have a distance to them. And you have to be cognitive of the distance, the range, how often you can shoot with them, your charge shot and all that other stuff. It's a very, very, very different type of third person shooter, but well worth checking out. So yeah, what else do we have in this month? Yeah, I think that's... Oh, no, that's pretty much it for...
March.
There we go. Which I... moving on to April, which didn't have... Well, it had Kinect Star Wars, which I assume Jason wants to talk about.
Sure, I'll go on about it a little bit. It's an interesting idea, and it starts out better than you might expect, but it quickly degenerates.
So it's a Kinect game then?
Huh? Yeah.
It's a Kinect game then.
Yeah, I mean, and that's... We're being a little tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, that's how I felt when I was playing it. Like, just, you know, a little bit too flaily, like, just... And I think part of it's fault of the technology more than the game itself, but the design doesn't really make up for it enough. And it probably doesn't also help that it's going seems to be going more for a family slash kid angle. It's cool, but it definitely feels like a prototype. So definitely not game of the year.
Definitely not game of the year. What else did we have? Bug Princess 2. No? Nobody? Okay, so then that means...
Fresh Defend was pretty good.
It's no Bug Princess 1, though. I mean, that would be bad.
Let's be real here.
That means I get to wax on a bit more about Xenoblade Chronicles, which...
Like, the game came out last year.
It came out in 2010. It's three...
Well, there you go, then. Top the game of the year.
But technically speaking, it came out this year for us, and
oh,
part
man,
of the reason...
Always making our own rules up, man.
Did it come out... Wait, I have a quick question. When did it come out in Europe?
Yes.
Well, ages ago.
Yeah, it came out August 2011.
Yeah.
So it's released in the three main regions in three different years.
Yep. So it's been Game of the Year for 2010, 2011, and 2012.
Oh,
okay. Not many games can say that, but see, here's where I'm kind of with Daniel on this. It came out last year. I bought it last year as an import, but I left it off of my Game of the Year list last year because it was announced for America after I started playing it.
And we're the
most
important, so I mean.
Yeah, so I knew it was coming out this year, so I was saving it for this year, but I do feel, because it was a game I played last year, but it technically came out for us this year. And I haven't decided yet. I'm going to toss a coin at this rate. But if I had to pick a game, this would be my game of the year. Again. Unofficially. It's 100 hours. Which is a huge undertaking for me, if you know my taste in games. There are like five games I put that much time into officially. It's an RPG that modernizes the genre. It shows that, you know, like a lot of people say that the JRPG's dead and that it's been stagnant, and this game kind of takes all of that and flips it on its head. It's like, you know what, we can make a JRPG, we can make one in the vein of the old JRPGs, but we can modernize it, we can take elements from other franchises, and we can streamline a lot of the processes in this genre. You know, like fast travel is a huge addition to it, I think. I think the fact that they tell you like all your major inventory. Like they make sure you know what you're gonna need later on, even if you haven't gotten that mission or gotten that story aspect yet. Which I think is a huge plus because sometimes you accidentally sell stuff. I think the gem system is something unique. I mean, again, I'm not a huge JRPG player, so maybe it's something in other games. I'm sure other games have things like this, but instead of using like boost stats and stuff like that, you're able to craft certain gems and attach them to your equipment, so you can, you know, you can get speed up, you can get double attack, you can get evasions and stuff like that, and it works into strategies in such minor ways that you don't really realize that you're doing it until, like, I didn't realize what I was doing with it until, like, halfway through the game, and then I realized, like, you know, I can make this one character who takes all the aggro from the enemies, and he'll be my main attack, and then he'll have evasion so nobody can hit him, and then, like, I'll have my main character who has, you know, who does major damage from behind, just attack while they're focusing on somebody else. And all the main characters play differently and stuff like that, which is another thing, because for the most part, your AI is stupid. I don't really know why people continue to put dumb AI on your team, but whatever. It has fantastic music. It has some of the most beautiful vistas I've seen this generation. And
Wii game.
Huh?
A Wii game.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between having beautiful vistas and having very detailed
ones.
Oh,
yeah, obviously, but like, obviously there's some part in that hardware has got to play in that.
Yeah, I mean, where the hardware really shows its age is when it comes to, like, textures and facial animations, because the character's clothing looks like it's just pasted onto their body, and their faces are really just, like, static. But, you know, you don't really see that often, so it's not a distract. But when you do see it, it's noticeable. But, it has some really expansive and huge environments, some great and creative enemy types. It's a fantastic world, in the fact that you're on two giant mechas. There's just so much to love about this game. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but as far as I know, I've never really been engrossed in a game as much as I was Xenoblade in quite some time. And the fact that not only do they have these huge vistas, but they make them all so unique and different and lively and have personalities, so that you always, you know, everything is it just brings out that part of me in gaming that just loves the exploration and finding all these things, because not because you're forced to and not because you're obligated to, but because you have that sense of exploration.
Oh, I know how that feels. Red Dead Redemption had that for me.
And it's the minor things that also encourages it. Like, you get XP for finding hidden locations on the map and for filling out your entire map. And the fact that, like, each world has a, you know, most games do the day and night cycle, which is okay. But it has a day and night cycle that's not just, you know, it's day, it's night, but it also changes. Sometimes it changes environments where, like, once just, there's a certain environment I saw it at night for the first time, and it's just awe-inspiring, especially being that I was on this high up cliff, and it has a beautiful draw distance, an amazing draw distance. And then there's something ominous. Like I said, you're on a giant mecha, so throughout the first half of the game, like, every time you go somewhere, there's this giant red eye is just staring at you from the other mecha, especially at night, and it's just, like, staring at you. And then when you finally make it to the other side, you get to see the other, and he's not as intimidating because he's home, he's safe, and this side is dangerous and unknown and stuff like that. And the fact that it's enemies roam around the world, and it's not based on levels. So, like, you can encounter level 90 enemies when you're, like, level 15, and it's just, like, this sense of, like, oh crap, I gotta get the hell out of here before he spots me, or I gotta draw these enemies away from him so he doesn't engage me while I'm fighting them, because you're pretty much screwed. And there's just so much to this game that I love, and it's a fantastic game. I will say that the ending takes you on this holy crap, what the hell are they talking about moment, but it still kind of works for me just because the rest of the game has been insane, just not this insane. So yeah, that's Xenoblade Chronicles. anybody checked out Skullgirls?
That's a fun game to know.
Okay, what is the next game on this list that we can check out? I was going to say, did anybody play Fez?
No.
No, but I watched Indie Game Movie.
Yeah, I watched Indie Game Movie as well.
Turn that off for other people.
Well, I'm just going to say, if we're talking about Xenoblades, maybe we should consider The Witcher again. I'm just kidding, we shouldn't.
The Witcher come out this year?
It came out for Xbox this year.
Oh, okay. Then, I mean, technically.
So, that for you guys listening, that was our co-game of the year last year. You should go play it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen again. What else is there? Oh, we talked about Prototype 2. Did anybody check that out?
Nope. Yeah, it was not that great. It was pretty generic. Everything about it was pretty generic. I don't know. I guess Darkness was in February, huh?
Yeah. The Walking Dead episode 1.
And here we go.
The thing is do we do The Walking Dead when it started or when it finishes? Because I think you only really know how it is when it finishes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we should save it until episode 5. It just, because you don't want to talk about it per episode, it makes sense.
Because I've played 3, 4, and 5, but not 1.
How did that work?
I didn't play it. I watched somebody
1 and 2, but not 3, 4, and 5.
I know. So like, I can't do that. Like, I can't do that with anything. I have to.
I was at the beginning. I'm in the middle of 4 right now, so maybe that'll give me some time to finish before we talk about it. But I will say that's one of my strong contenders too. But we'll get to that.
It's the BGA game of the year, so I mean, we have to.
Oh, it must be good then. Because everything the BGA knows everything. I mean, I'm not saying The Walking Dead isn't good. I'm saying that. Always got to trust the VGA. all those Doritos and Mountain Dews and...
I mean, Madden 04 was Game of the Year in 2003. I don't know any other game that came out in 2003 that can compare to Madden 04, so... Fable Heroes actually came out this year. This is not a good year for Fable.
There hasn't been a good year for Fable since Fable 2 released.
Yeah, but I mean, really, it's not been a good year for Fable. Like, I mean, most IP. I mean, okay, it's also not been a good year for Resident Evil, but we'll get to that in a bit.
All the new leaving. Yeah, I mean, whatever. Hey, I
mean, usually you don't get these big breaks in quality.
Fable and golf, pretty cool on Windows Phone, but.
Minecraft, Xbox Live.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Did anybody check out Starhawk, which is another game that got people fired this year?
I played some of it.
I think the multiplayer is free now, or is it? Something's free on PSN, and I've played that, but it
was...
The single player was free for Plus members for like a month, but not anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I just know that it had a black main character, and that was why it was kind of famous.
It's a little cool. I mean, it's a space western, so, and it leans more on the western than the sci-fi, although it's obviously very strongly sci-fi. I think it boils down to, though, it, again, kind of like generic characters and motivations and not that great shooting mechanics, but...
Basically, it was a setup for the tutorial to the multiplayer.
I mean, no, I wouldn't say it's that, but, I mean, I think that the mechanics hurt the multiplayer more than they hurt the single player. It's not a bad game. It's just not great.
A good game. Yeah. Happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's all right. If you're into shooters a lot, or you find dropping custom things an interesting twist, which it was okay. I mean, that it's interesting, but it's not enough to carry the whole game.
Did anybody check out Diablo 3?
I did.
I played the Starter Edition, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to wait for Diablo 2. Because I took after the whole lag during the single player, can't get onto the server fiasco. I was like, I'm just going to buy Torchlight 2, which is going to be a comparable game for less than half the price, and I don't have to deal with any bullshit DRM.
But that's it's worth, I loved Diablo 3.
You also got it for free, though.
But yeah, I got it for free because I was on I did the World of Warcraft annual pass thing, so I didn't have to pay for it, and I don't know if I would have. But, I mean, I loved it. People in my apartment can attest that I played the entire game through in one sitting. Like, I started it in the morning. I didn't stop playing until, like, 3 or 4
wow.
the next morning.
That's how people in Korea die, you know?
I know. I did get up to go to the bathroom.
We made sure that he was hydrated, don't worry.
Yeah. I had support. But, yeah. But, I mean, I played it through like that, and then it kind of died for me. It was a really good game, and I enjoyed it, but... After that, it became too difficult, and I kind of lost interest, I suppose.
But that's the whole reason why you play those games, surely. Like, that's why everybody plays Diablo, isn't it? Well, that's what they make it out to be.
I mean, it went from, you know, I was having a good time, and, like, normal mode was extremely easy, and I don't think I ever died playing normal mode. But then, like, once you get into the next, like, you get through nightmare mode, that was okay. And then once I hit... I can't remember what the third one is called. I think it's called Hell or something. But, like, it goes from, like, maybe a 7 or 8 on difficulty to, like, 15, and you're just dying in every pack. And I was like, well, I've had my fun with this game, and just kind of stopped playing.
It happens.
Have you played Diablo 2?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was really young when I played Diablo 2, but I played a lot of Diablo 2.
Would you say that it was better... or not?
That's hard because I wasn't a big part of like the multiplayer community in Diablo 2 because I was so young, and that's kind of what people loved about that was, you know, getting three of your friends and doing that. I had more fun with Diablo 3, but I think that's because I had friends that were playing with me, and it was more fresh in my memory. You know, I wasn't, like, 12 years old. So, but from what I can remember, it's kind of the same game with more polish. I like the talent slash rune system a lot more in this one than in Diablo 3 because than in Diablo 2 because it just allows you a lot of exploration within your character. Like a lot of people say, well, does that make it an RPG when you have all your options available to you all the time? But I really loved it because there was never a penalty for me trying something new. Mm-hmm. If I felt like something wasn't working, I could just try something else completely new. And if that wasn't working, I could try something else. And it just like allowed me to create like this specific skill set that really worked for my play style. And I could absolutely sort of decimate with that. And when I would talk to people who were playing the same class as me, they would be using something completely different, but having the same level of effectiveness. And I really hope that this talent / rune system kind of finds its way into other games, because that was one of the main things I enjoyed about it was how much I was able to experiment with my own character.
Max Payne 3.
I played that. Yes, I was actually, I had a whole review, like, I took so many notes, and I just lost them all, and so we never had a review on our site, but, I don't know, are we going to do our personal top 7s again this year?
Yeah.
This will probably be on my list, probably on the lower end, but it did a lot of things right, and a lot of things not so right. I mean, it's a Rockstar game, so you know the action wasn't really that great, like the shooting gameplay, and this game's all about shooting. That said, I think it's the best Rockstar has done with gunplay. The whole bullet time mechanic, I mean, it's obviously a huge part of Max Payne. It's cool, it gets kind of old, but they do a lot of really cool set pieces. Like, for example, there's this one part where he's in a like a factory or something, and he grabs onto like a chain. You know how they do in like movies a lot? They get on a chain and kick the lever and start going up, and that's a slow-mo part. And there's a lot of set pieces like that that are really cool. The voice acting, like in any Rockstar game, phenomenal. Supporting characters, really interesting, and some complex ones. And Max, obviously, is this tormented protagonist and really like self-loathing, and it's just a different kind of character. I haven't played the first two Max Payne, so this was the first one I played, and it does tie back into those. Like there's a few interspersed sections where he's back in New Jersey. Obviously, most of the game takes place in Brazil, and the ambiance of, I mean, it's a pretty linear game, but the ambiance of the level design is like so detailed. Like there's this one point where I just stopped and watched these two kids like playing soccer behind this fence, and it was just like this weird experience. I don't know. I thought they did a really good job capturing all that, and like both cool parts of Sao Paulo and some of the darker parts. And ultimately, it does get bogged down in some things. I feel like it tries to be too artsy at times visually. Like there's this whole effect they do. Because like an alcoholic, he's always drinking, so they like mess with the visuals. And at first, it's really cool, it's interesting, but they overdo it, I think. And the end of the game, it feels almost lazy. They just start throwing you into these huge firefights that are kind of, I don't know. Like the pacing is a lot better in the first two thirds, three quarters than at the end. And then when the end does come, the actual end of the game, it's kind of abrupt, but it's fun. It's different. Back to the fun. Is an interesting character, and I don't know.
How did you feel about the cutscenes? I know a lot of people complain about cutscenes all the time.
There were times when I felt like they were intrusive, either being long or being a lot of them, or covering some things that I felt I could have played. But So there, I mean, that was an issue for me too. However, overall, they're pretty good quality and they're interesting. So it that kind of mitigated that some.
All right.
Okay. You also played Game of Thrones, right?
I did, but we don't need to talk about that. It's I had some hopes that it would be cool, but I mean, more than anything, the combat design is just terrible. It's one of those where I don't know why they didn't go for real-time combat. Like, maybe they felt they couldn't do it, but you just queue up attacks and then wait for them to happen and then queue up more attacks, and just it's not a very well-designed game.
That's pretty much the same way for every Cyanide game, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, and I knew they didn't have the best track record coming in, but I'm a huge fan of the books and the show. I figured I'd give it a shot.
Yeah,
and played a couple hours and just got super frustrated in one bit where I just threw it down. I was like, screw it.
It happens. Sonic the Hedgehog 4, Episode 2. We already kind of talked about episodic gaming before the show started, but yeah, year and a half for an Episode 2. Really isn't an episodic game at that point. It's a sequel. And it wasn't much better. It was still kind of at this
the tail.
Point, yeah, which isn't a big. It's when Nintendo brought back Yoshi into 2D Mario games, it was a big deal because he hadn't seen him in 14 years. When Sega brought back Tails into Sonic games, we hadn't seen Tails since the last Sonic game. So it's
the last Sonic game that was actually better than Sonic 4 as well.
Yes, but both of them were Sonic Generations and Sonic Colors. So it's really hard to say, like, oh my gosh, Tails is back, when it hasn't been that long since we had seen Tails. Dragon's Dogma.
You mean you buy the Resident Evil 6 demo and you get a game with it?
Well, I think at this point I'd much rather have bought the Dragon's Dogma than the Resident Evil 6. especially being that everybody got access to that demo around the same time anyhow.
I haven't played it.
Also. Nobody played Dragon's Dogma. I'm kind of surprised, actually.
Josh wants to.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those things where at this point, Dark Souls was still kind of like consuming my entire life, and so it kind of slipped through the cracks. It's still on my to playlist.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was great timing too, because it's May wasn't that busy, so it's not like it had a lot of competition.
It depends if you were playing Diablo or something like that, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, usually, PC gaming and console gaming doesn't have that much crossover as far as, like...
Well, Dragon's Dogma didn't even release on PC, so...
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not like people are like, oh man, I have to buy one of the others. Yeah.
I feel like Diablo is one of those games, though, that even if you mostly play on consoles, like, a lot of people will still play that game on PC. But, I mean, that's... I think, did Martin play it or something? I thought we talked about it.
Yeah, I think Martin played it.
I'm sure either him or Phil have faded. I know we've talked about it before, but yeah, I guess we'll. You know, it is what it is. I don't think it's anybody's game of the year contender.
No, and it'll come up later.
I hear it's a great first entry in the series, so we'll see. I also assume none of us. I don't even know if any of us actually own a Move, but Sorcery finally came out this year as well.
No.
Don't all talk at once.
Oh, is that the game that they showed when they were first showing off the Move, and they were like, oh, look, magic.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah,
that
was a thing.
Like 3 years.
And then they retrofitted it to make it more generic.
Yeah, I basically forgot that the Move was a thing.
Yeah, I forgot that existed, so.
I think Sony's on the same boat with you.
Yeah, it seems like it.
I don't know, because they just released Wonder Book, so they're pushing even deeper.
No, they released it, but they didn't advertise it. That's a big difference. But again, we're not going into this. I guess it's hard not to bash Sony when the next game we talk about is Resistance Burning Sky.
Game of the year. That and Call of Duty to declassify.
Everything made by Nihilistic should just be in the game of the year. Every award. It's so good they have to change it. Like, the studio's so good they changed the name.
Well, I have to. I'll give them all the credit in the world. I don't know many people who could have made two first-person shooters in a year of development time and had neither one of them turn out well.
I think a lot of people can make two and have one turn out.
I don't know many people who've made two, but the fact that they made this awful game and you gave them another popular brand and said, you know what, go ahead and make this in 5 months. I don't know if that's Sony or Activision just being extremely stupid with the decision making. Like, as far as I understand, like, they made Resistance, and then they were given Call of Duty right afterwards to build on that engine, and it's like, it made no sense whatsoever. This game came out to awful reviews, and...
And by it, awful, we need to stress awful, like, ones and twos, not like fives and sixes.
Yeah, it's like a burn if you see it at all. If some kid's playing, you knock that feet out of his hand, and you spank it.
Step your game up!
Yeah, that might lead to some problems.
But yes, it's one of those games, and this, again, it goes. We'll talk about Call of Duty: Justified when it came up. The problem isn't that it's a bad first person shooter. I mean, that is a problem. The problem is this is one of Sony's big brands, and the fact that you don't half ass any of your titles in a major brand, they can only survive so much.
Especially
no,
when you're
in a new Half-Life 2 in two big brands.
Yeah. Especially when you're trying to use that game to move a platform.
Yeah. And if you want it to remain a viable brand in the future, you need to do that. And this isn't what they did, and that's going to be a problem. But we shall see. I mean, Sony had their priorities. They wanted a Resistance game out there. They put it out there, didn't. So we shall see how the next Resistance is met, because it's not a Resistance 2 and 3 were really that hot on the console. This isn't helping that brand.
Did we skip Ghost Recon? I don't think that's anyone's game of the year, but...
Did that come out in May?
Yeah, May 22nd.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it on the list. Oh, there we go.
Again, I think Martin might have been the only one of us who played this. So kind of, he's not here. But
yeah. So, look, I was kind of interested in it, like, some E3s ago, and then I played it, Eurogamer, last year, and I was like, yeah, this isn't the game that I thought it would be.
Yeah, well, I think you guys remember when the beta came out, Martin was trashing it.
Yeah.
When he got the actual game, he had said it was like almost a completely different thing. So I would imagine your Eurogamer experience also doesn't translate to the full title, but
yeah, it's still not something that's going to stand out.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. And again, guy on the box with a gun and the title.
maybe we should just have an article of games that are shooters without a guy on the box with a gun in his hand. We'll find that one game.
Give that game game of the year.
We'll give that box art of the year just because it's different.
We do have a box art of the year award, too.
But usually it's for the worst box art of the year, and I think we already know who's in the lead for that one. Batman's going for it again. so that will take us through May, and then it will hit up June, which usually has very few releases due to some game trade show or something like that. I forget the name. But yeah, there's Inversion. I don't even remember what the hell that is.
It was a game about reversing gravity, and it wasn't very good. It was by Saber, if you know who they are.
And I think we can guess what is
on. Yeah, that's pretty much Inversion.
Do the Halo Combat Evolved anniversary?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they
wasn't
did.
That was pretty good. I mean,
that
it
was really good.
It was a port.
That was
but
fucking
still,
great.
Yeah,
but see, this one.
That's what you did with somebody else's game with their graphics. That's why.
this one paid with the cover because of gravity. It's horizontal, so yeah. He's facing downward instead of standing there. So he's still standing there, just face different. Maybe I will talk about this off air. Gravity Rush, which I've heard really good things about. I've heard fantastic things about
it. I have too, and I have not been able to play it.
I was about to say, I don't know if any of us own a Vita.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if anybody in the country owns a Vita. I'm only kidding. Maybe two people.
So Gravity Rush, check it out and tell us about it. Now you bought Chainsaw, which I do want to check out. But
I watched somebody play it. It seems like a very sort of tongue-in-cheek.
It's a suited game.
Yeah.
very tongue-in-cheek. It's fun. It's not too long. It doesn't really outstay its welcome. Not really a $60 game, though. Well, not
yeah,
really.
That was my beef. I think you can find it for like 20 now. But
didn't it launch at 40?
I thought it launched at 60.
Maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, I don't remember these prices. I mean, most of the time they collapse anyhow.
I mean, by now they're like $15, $20.
Yeah. Suda makes, he makes fun games, but they end up being like not refined games.
Yeah. I would say that's what, that describes Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yeah, and it describes No More Heroes.
It's very, the humor is very clever at some points. There's a lot of very good references in that game.
Yeah,
that's another thing that he seems to do, because even in Shadows of the Damned, I thought it was like that too. It just wasn't refined. It had a lot of good things, but it wasn't refined.
Yeah, and I mean, his games are fun. They just won't ever be Game of the Year contender because, I mean, like I think there's a certain basic level of presentation that you need to have to be considered. I'm not talking about you need to be like a AAA title, but you kind of do need to be refined and, you know, run at a decent frame rate.
Yeah.
Pokemon Conquest, which I have not played. I still want to check this out because I think it's such an odd crossover. It's a Pokemon world. I don't think it's a world. It's a Feudal Japan real-time strategy game or something like that.
Are there Pokemon?
Yeah. The generals have a Pokemon as their second. I guess it's a really weird crossover game.
I'm almost surprised that it even came out here.
It actually sold really well. It's opening month, I think.
Well, of course. There's Pokemon on the box.
Yeah, which, I mean, it's a great way. If you wanted to build up your Japanese feudal strategy RPG, it's the best way to introduce it.
Well, they did it for Mystery Dungeon as well.
Yeah, yeah. Again, that I was actually surprised at. I enjoy the Echo games, but they sometimes aren't, you know, they're fun games, but they're nothing special.
They're very repetitive as well.
Yeah, and there go Batman 2 really opened that up.
Wait, you liked a Batman game? No way.
I hate as many as I like.
Like the Lego games, but they put Batman in it.
I don't like Lego Batman 1 that much. To be fair. But yeah, my biggest problem, and this happens in all the Lego games, I still don't know why, is they don't do online co-op yet.
Oh, well, there have been some Lego games that have online co-op. Oh, it was Lego Star Wars 2. It was either Lego Star Wars 2 or Lego Star Wars A Complete Saga on 360. I played that game online.
Huh, well, this one doesn't have online co-op. I don't know. Because it's like, I played it when I visited my friend in Chicago and he bought it so we can play it, and that was a ton of fun. And I'm like, okay, we'll continue this when I get back to New York, and it's like, oh, it does not have online co-op. What's the point? So yeah, they need to work on that. I doubt Lego City Undercover has it because that's a different type of game, but.
So, like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, does that have it?
I don't know, but I don't care. So, like, Lego Lord of the Rings, they did the best thing ever they could with that game. And they put the movie, the track from the movie, so it's Ian McKellen, it's Elijah Wood and all that, in the game.
Oh, nice.
Oh my god.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
What? You skipped Game of the Year contender Steel Battalion.
The Amazing Spider-Man.
And Game of the Year contender Magic the Gathering.
Magic Team. Actually, I did skip a Game of the Year contender. But I think this is out. Quantum Conundrum?
I have that game.
Yeah, it's a tough
one.
Yeah, it's a fun game. I wouldn't say it was Game of the Year.
Oh, I wouldn't say it's Game of the Year contender, but I honestly, of the ones that we did...
It would have been nice if Airtoy, I think that's the name of the developer, Airtoy, yeah. When somebody sent the memo out of you don't put platforming sections in first-person shooters, it'd be nice if Airtight kind of got that same memo, but...
Well, it's probably because Kim Swift, who designed Portal, worked on this game, and they did that in Portal, so they're probably like, oh, let's do it again.
Yeah, but it's not, like, it's not much of a, like, because you can, it's basically you fall through a portal, and you can pretty much aim them, because you can look through them.
Right.
You can't really aim your jumps in Quantum Conundrum, so you end up falling a lot. And there was a couple of puzzles, and I was like, this puzzle was bullshit. I want to kill whoever designed this puzzle.
Apparently, they need to play more Metroid Prime, because that does first-person platforming pretty damn well.
You know, at some point we got to talk about our all-time games, because that is on my list.
We started that last year, we never finished it. I think we had like the, well, it's a game of the decade thing, and then I think we did the nominees, and we actually never came up with the list. But remind people.
Metroid Prime.
But yes, Amazing Spider-Man was there. So was the movie, to put it out there. I don't, and finally,
well, London 2012, the official video game of the Olympics.
Yeah, they already had Mario and Sonic, and that was, I always preferred a fantastical sports games over Sims, so.
Well, considering, like, the Mario and Sonic games are actually fun at some point, and London 2012, the official video game of the Olympic Games, which is actually what it's called, by the way, isn't fun at all, ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like your cash-in license movie.
Yeah.
Cash-in license game for X popular sporting event. Like,
yeah, yeah. And we'll finish on this because I know Daniel's been dying to talk about it all day. Spec Ops the Line.
Oh my god, I played the demo and I was like, this is just the most generic shit ever. And I stopped playing. I didn't even get finished the demo. That's how, like, how much I hated it. And then, like, there's loads of people going, oh, the story is really good. And, like, when you get to this certain point in the story, like, you know, it gets really interesting. It's like, no, because, like, the story is supposed to be a commentary on, like, people who play generic military shooters and how you have an illusion of choice, but you don't really have any choice and stuff. But it's like, you can put a story like that in a game, but if the gameplay is just the most generic piece of shit ever, I'm not going to bother to get through to it. I don't know. Like, and then the fact is that it has every single trope of, like, pretty much video games today. It has your cover-based shooting. It's brown everywhere. You know, Nolan North is the main character, and he doesn't bother changing his voice. You know, every trope of this generation, pretty much. And, you know, even the developers said that, you know, they were forced to pretty much put the multiplayer in. You know? Like, what's
It sounds like meta commentary that got broken by
Yeah.
It's. I think I've heard the same argument against Matt Hazard.
Where
it's like it tried to make it. You know, it was trying to be a parody, but at the same point, if you're going to parody something, you don't want to be responsible for those same broken mechanics that you complain about.
Yeah.
Which is probably why, you know, parodies probably don't work that well in video games. Conga did it, but that wasn't parodied in video games. It was parodied in movies.
Time Splitters parodied movies mostly, I guess. Time Splitters 4 was supposed to parody video games. I know, Source Object. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I think that will do it for us. That was 4 months. It was a decent amount of games, but it wasn't really huge. It was
spectacular.
Yeah. And that was before the summer hit, and that's when it really just kind of gets depressing.
Next podcast is going to be pretty short, huh?
Well, we get September, which still isn't that much better. But yeah, it improves it some. And we'll see what else we have next week as far as news and video game stuff goes. Is there anything else you folks want to say before we begin to wrap for this week?
Nope.
Okay.
I want to say this one thing. Cause you mentioned Nolan North in Spec Ops.
Yeah.
I just heard this idea from someone else. What if they made Nolan North All-Stars with all the characters that
have played? That would be pretty good, actually. That would probably be a pretty funny game.
I assume it would sell more than PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. But that's neither here nor there. So, yes, I want to thank Josh and Nick for joining us.
Oh, anytime.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
And as always, for Jason, Daniel, myself, this has been Duplo episode 92.